You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from George Mason University School of Business. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Mark Haas, Association for Enterprise Growth, Josh Levy, Brunch Digital, and John Schuhart, Graybeard Coaching. John, who do we have on the air with us today?
Our first guest today is Bill Buff, Managing Partner of Stratacom. Our second guest is Reed Jackson, President and CEO of CompuSearch. Our third guest are Mike Keemer, the CEO, and Dave Innest, the Chief Science Officer of Origint. And our last guest is Jim Morgan, Managing Director of People Stretch Solutions.
Excellent. Let's get to know our first guest, Bill Buff, Managing Partner of Stratacom. Bill, what is Stratacom?
Stratacom is a communications, public relations, and advocacy firm here in D.C. that focuses on mobility issues.
Uh-huh. And how large or how small is this team?
We consider ourselves small to mid-size. Mm-hmm. There's about 30 of us headquartered here in D.C. and also with an office in Michigan.
Where are you from originally?
Well, you can probably tell from my accent. Uh-huh. I'm from Western North Carolina.
Uh-huh. How many brothers and sisters?
One brother who is 2 years younger than
uh-huh.
I am.
And 8 to 14 years old, what was the major thing going on with you? Was it playing sports or making money, or what was going on with you 8 to 14?
Well, it wasn't any of that for me. During that period, when I was 10 years old, my father got very sick, very suddenly suffered a series of strokes and sort of degenerated through a number of research hospitals, rehabilitation hospitals, ultimately ended up in a nursing home in our hometown where he spent the last couple of years of his life and died when I was 13.
Uh-huh.
Bill, wow, that's has to have shaped you quite a bit. How did you become the father figure at home, and how has that made you who you are today?
Yeah, you know, for better or for worse, that experience it was certainly foundational for me. You know, I had a lot of people tell me that I was the man of the household. Now, you know, my mother though did a great job. I was essentially raised, you know, for 4 or 5 years in there by a single mother, and so she, you know, she protected me. She made sure that I was a kid, but I also did feel a sense of responsibility around
the house.
What
do you mean? How do you know you felt the sense? How would that show up? That sense of responsibility you felt.
You know, I felt like I needed to be a source of support for my brother. I needed, and for my mother, I needed to mature more quickly and do what I could to contribute around the house and to take care of her.
Mm-hmm. How's that showing up nowadays? The sense of responsibility that you felt toward your toward your brother and toward your mother after your father passed at 13. How's that showing up at work?
Well, I hope I'm a fairly responsible guy, and
a young lady here with you. Her name's Nicole. Nicole, how long have you worked with Bill at Stratacom?
3 years.
Uh-huh. So what's his reputation at Stratacom? What do people think of Bill?
I think people in and outside of Stratacom think of Bill as a people person, someone that you can kind of go to in a pinch, but also to celebrate successes. And that's kind of how I think of him as, you know, the head of our company.
You mentioned earlier that Bill had a son recently, and his son had an effect on Bill and the business. What are you talking about, Nicole?
Yeah, Bill recently had a young son, and I think that he's brought a little bit of that into the workplace in a really positive way. He'll often comment lately that it's harder to leave home, but it's better, to come home now. And just he brings that family aspect to the company.
Wait a minute.
Well,
he's running a business.
Yeah.
And how do you know that he's got a kid? Do you guys talk about personal stuff? I mean, I read in the newspapers that everybody's suing everybody and people hate everybody else. It sounds like you're one big happy family.
You know, we work together and we are a pretty tight-knit group. We have a holiday party later today, and it's always hosted at one of the partners' houses, and families and partners are invited. We work a lot, but we also have fun, and we kind of bring the family aspect.
So make sure I understood. John?
Mm-hmm. So, Bill, after your father died, who were the non-family members that were important in your life?
Yeah, there were a number. We were very active in the church growing up, and our minister at the time has been a mentor to me throughout my life. He actually married my wife and me and my brother and I. I was active in scouting. There were a number of scout leaders that I was very fortunate to have some strong male
role models. Did you seek these people out, or did they come to you? How'd that happen?
I think they they basically came to me. You know, I think my I'd been active in scouting before my father got sick, and so that was sort of there. But the church was a really strong source of support for my mother in particular, and for us growing up.
So how does that experience working with that minister and being active in the church, how does that show up today at Stratacom?
You know, I sincerely appreciate the folks who were not related to me who took time to be a father figure to me. And, you know, I hope that I take the same level of interest and can be a similar mentor to other folks, to our, you know, to clients as well as to our team at Stratacom.
Mark?
So in college, you majored in anthropology.
Yes.
How did that translate into how you run your company and deal with other people?
Well, you know, anthropologists sort of parachute, or cultural anthropologists at least, sort of parachute into unfamiliar cultures and observe quite a bit, and take time to get to understand the environment before they start making forming opinions. And I try to do that as well. You know, culture is very important to us at Stratacom, and so I think it is. The focus on culture has held true for me going back to anthropology.
Do you feel like that's helped form a more positive culture within the company?
I certainly hope so. We've just won a number of awards in Detroit, as well as a couple here in D.C. from PR trade associations and transportation groups as being either a best place to work or employer of the year. We think our culture is really a competitive advantage for
Josh?
Us.
Josh?
Nicole, do you feel like you're with a family at work? Does it even feel like work?
You know, it can feel like work sometimes, but we get to share a lot about our personal life, and it's a pretty tight-knit group, being able to, you know, have lunch together, happy hours, dinners, even things like holiday parties. It feels a lot more like a family than I think other companies do.
Bill, why are you smiling now?
Well, it's just that, you know, we do want it to feel like a family, and I kind of connect this back to my dad. You know, I sort of learned that life can be short. At the end, friends and family are what matter, and you ought to have some fun along the way with the time that you've got. And so, you know, we spend so much time at work that we do want it to be an enjoyable environment. But it's also, you know, we set very high standards, and we hold people accountable to very high standards, and we think that it, in that type of environment, high performers can really thrive.
John?
Yeah, what's it like to have you as a mentor?
Well, I hope that I'm going to listen. I hope that I'm going to ask good questions. That's something I've been working on more, rather than just sort of offering an idea, asking good questions. And I also try to be a connector. You know, I feel like at this point in my life, I've met some other people, and if I can ever introduce somebody or bring in another resource that would be helpful, I see that as my role.
Yeah, I hear the word connection. We heard people, person several times. Where does that come from? Is that your mom?
That must be it, yeah. She's definitely the people person. She's the talker in the family. My dad was much more quiet. They say that my brother is like my dad, and I'm more like my mother.
What did your mother do for a living?
She was a school teacher when I grew up.
What grade did she teach?
Fifth grade.
And were you ever in her class?
No, she made sure that I was in the had the teachers that she wanted me to have that were good teachers, but I was not in her fifth grade
class.
So
your mother knew your teachers?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Uh-huh. So your mother got their input directly. How did you feel with your mother knowing exactly how your teachers felt about you? Didn't that make you feel bad, the fact that she knew it?
No, academics was kind of our jam growing up. We really focused on school. I always did fairly well.
So you don't have a problem being measured. I mean, basically, those teachers were measuring you, and you felt comfortable. In fact, you felt comfort being measured and being mentored.
That's right.
By the teachers.
That's right.
Uh-huh. And you say that academically you sort of enjoyed school?
I did. Yeah, we, you know.
What's the similarity between academics and what you do nowadays at Stratacom?
I would say that our secret to success, one of our secrets to success at Stratacom is that we try to never stop learning. You know, in my career, I came to D.C. knowing absolutely nothing about transportation. I didn't know anything about government contracting. I really was consider myself sort of a policy wonk more than a business guy. And so at each of these phases, I feel like, you know, the only thing constant in life is change. And so you've always got to be looking at what's next and figuring out how you're going to evolve to stay current.
So you think your ability to your joy of learning has really helped you stay current in terms of the world of business, and the fact that you really appreciate family and life is short has really helped you build a team?
I certainly hope so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, John?
So what does your mom think about your success today?
I think she's pretty proud of her boy. Mm-hmm. You know, she doesn't really understand what I do when I talk to people about, you know, what is communications, what is this advocacy work. You know, it's every once in a while if we get a big hit on TV, she knows to watch the news that night. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I think she's just happy that I'm here.
What's the website address of this organization known as Stratacom?
Stratacom.net, which is Stratacom.net.
We've been speaking with Bill Buff, managing partner of Stratacom, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com. That's executiveleadersradio.com. Learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this break. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Reed Jackson, who's the president and CEO of CompuSearch. Reed, what is CompuSearch? What are you guys doing?
We're an enterprise software company that serves the federal agencies and the vendor community.
How large or how small is this organization?
A little more than 300 people.
About 300 people. What kind of revenue are you guys doing?
We're pushing right about $100 million.
About $100 million. And how'd you get a job with this company?
I actually was part of an original buyout team in 2005 that bought out the prior ownership.
So you guys brought in third-party money and bought this company out. You were part of the management buyout, it sounds like. Am I correct about that?
That's right. It was my way of getting a job at a company that I thought was great. Uh-huh. And it was my way of...
Well, you evidently people with some serious money believed in you. Where are you from originally?
Small town, mill town in upstate New York called Ilion.
How many brothers and sisters?
I have an older brother and a twin sister.
What was it like having an older brother and a twin sister in a small town?
You know, in that small town, I always had a home inside my family. I had a natural ally in my brother because he was my brother. I had a natural ally in my sister because she was my twin. So in a dynamic of three people, I was the one that sort of always had some place to be, always had somewhere to go.
How's that affecting psychically your whole thing about being the president and CEO of this organization's 300-person organization called CompuSearch, this fact that you always felt you had a home?
Oh, I think it's what we try to create inside of our team as a place where people feel they fit, where people can feel natural and do their best work.
Am I putting words in your mouth? Do you really think that's true?
No, I think that's the essence of a strong performing team.
What's the essence of a strong performing team?
A place where people can bring whatever their skills are and feel they can deploy it and have a place that they can be effective and that it can be respected.
So you're bringing your, I don't mean to steal Mark's question, but you're bringing your small town into the Metro DC area building this company, aren't you?
Well, the small town was a blue-collar town. It was a great blue-collar town, and I think when a blue-collar town, you bring impact. You have to do the work.
Mark, why don't you take that?
So what experiences did you have growing up that sort of you bring with you made a difference in your life?
You know, one of my first jobs was working as a 14-year-old at my neighbor's lumberyard. Mm-hmm. You know, after school, riding my bike, working under the table, doing every dirty job in that lumberyard. No job too small to get done well. And I worked there all the way really through college in my summer
breaks.
What's
that have to do with building a 300-person firm and having a significant source of money invest in you?
I think it's part of building any size firm that's successful is not losing touch with that ethos that, you know, every small job is worth doing well, and there's no job that's below anybody to be done.
How long did you keep that job for that you got when you were how young?
I was probably about 14 when I started working there.
And how long did you work there for?
Right up through college.
Why'd you do that? Why'd you work there all those years?
It was good money for someone who was a teenager.
But why didn't you go skip around the different jobs?
You know, it was a great little environment with my next door neighbor who was always sort of a
Did you keep on taking on additional responsibility there?
Yeah, it was a place where, you know, as I grew up from being the youngest person in that shop to somebody who was driving the lumber trucks and dealing with clients.
So
it was
you kept
a nice
on taking on responsibility like you did at this organization. Josh?
Reed, you said you were the youngest. How does that shape to you in interacting with the other employees there and how you treat your company today?
Well, as the youngest guy in a lumber yard, yep. you're very much...
You're the youngest guy in the lumberyard.
Everyone's looking down on you. You have to sort of scrap your way to respect. And I feel like one of the lessons I bring to CompuSearch is making sure that people at every level don't have to scrap their way to respect. You know, that they start with respect and start with a good place to be.
Mm-hmm. John,
what were you into as a kid?
You know, I really grew up as a skier in upstate New York.
And how did that manifest, or what did you invent around skiing?
Well, you know, skiing, I think, is a great sort of freestyle form, and so you're inventing yourself kind of every day on that slope. But in that town, we were, as teenage boys, we were building ski jumps, which you had to build pretty quickly, enjoy them before the ski patrol came and knocked them down.
How does that desire to be free and improvise, how does that show up today at CompuSearch?
You know, I think, unfortunately, in skiing, my path was always go fast and take chances. That continues in probably all parts of my life. There are some consequences with going fast and taking chances. But if you're being smart and you're looking at the path you want to go and not the obstacle, you don't target fixate, you don't hit the obstacle, you actually make the hole between the trees.
So who today do you help steer around obstacles?
Well, that's my executive team. That's my role as CEO, is really making sure that people have a thoughtful view of what they're trying to do and how they're going to be successful there, and really see the rocks and see the trees before we hit them.
In the green room, you mentioned that neighbor, the guy who owned the lumber yard, you called him a secular uncle.
Yeah.
How does that show up? How are you a secular uncle today?
You know, he was a very gentle, kind adult who would always listen, very, very slow to anger, even as a boss and the founder of this lumber yard. And I hope I bring that into the company for my folks as well.
Does he know about your success today?
Mm-hmm. He passed away when I was he passed away from a long illness when I was in college.
How do you think he'd feel if he found out about your success today?
I think he'd be proud.
Why?
I hope I bring a lot of what he brought to his small company into a larger corporate world without losing touch with that core work ethic and that core way that he treated everyone.
Perfect. Mark?
Growing up in a small town, what experiences or opportunities did you not have that you were able to capture in business, and either that personally or provide for your employees?
Yeah, I think every environment you grow up with has its pros and its cons. And in the small town, it was a wonderfully tight-knit environment, mm-hmm. but it was a pretty narrow aperture on what was possible mm-hmm. in the world. And so coming out of that environment, eventually relocating here to DC, it creates, I've tried to fill my own intellectual curiosity and bringing it into CompuSearch. That means we're pretty expansive about how we view the world and what we're trying to do with bringing efficiency into the way government operates and interacts with their vendors.
Mm-hmm. Do you see the 300 person company similar to the small town in terms of culture and environment?
Yeah, you know everyone. You get to know them well. You get to know what's great about them. You understand, you know, how to work through and get to their strengths. So I think there's a lot there.
Josh, what's on your mind? What are you thinking?
So when did you start really being an engineer in your life?
You know, I really think that being an engineer is something that's born into your soul. So I think you start with it in you, and then how you develop it and what you do from there is interesting. So I started with tinkering with Legos, taking everything apart in the garage. It was always there. It was just
What kind of stuff were you taking apart in the garage?
Oh, I kind of feel like we took apart everything my parents owned, and some of it we got back together again and worked in order.
The lawnmower, et cetera.
The lawnmower, the bicycles, the Yeah.
Huh? How many times did you get in trouble for doing that?
That's another story.
What's
the website address of this organization known as CompuSearch?
It is CompuSearch.com.
How do you spell that?
CompuSearch.com.
We were speaking with Reed Jackson, President and CEO of CompuSearch, here on Executive Leaders Radio. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce you to Mike Kiemer and Dave Ennist, CEO and Chief Science Officer of an organization known as Origint. What is Origint? What are you guys doing?
Origint is a predictive analytics startup. We use data to accelerate cures for neurological and neurodegenerative diseases. We try and anticipate and predict patient symptoms and use that information to design better human clinical trials.
All right. And how much money have you guys raised?
We've raised about $1.5 million in investor equity.
And where are you from originally, Michael?
Originally from St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Minnesota. How many brothers and sisters?
I'm the second of five.
And did you tell me you have an interesting family? Tell me about that.
I've got a large extended family.
So. How many cousins do you have? How many members of the
family? First cousins is probably about 25, and then extended cousins. It's all a very tight-knit community within the larger family.
You mentioned about 100 people.
Yeah, that's about right.
Uh-huh. What was your reputation amongst the 100?
So I skewed toward the older end of my generation, which sort of naturally leads you to be sort of a leader among that group.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
My older sister is just barely a year older than I am, and she was the kind of person who was to be out there sort of fighting for our expanded rights and things as kids. Mm-hmm. And very early I learned to appreciate the value of having a specialist who can fight for things that you're not necessarily good at and you can focus on the
other
thing.
Boy, that sounds like Dave right there. So,
Now you do predictive analytics. What kind of things were you into as a kid?
So I was definitely a math and books kind of kid. I like to spend a lot of time, in libraries with puzzle books, spending time, building mental models and breaking them down in my head to try and solve different problems.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And Josh, what do you got?
So both of you seem to come from a strong interest of math. How has that really played into your role in the business today?
Well, so everything that we're doing is math. We're applying better, mathematical and statistical methods to try and develop new insights about disease.
Interesting.
And it's extraordinarily fun, I guess, for all of us to be able to sit around and work on really challenging intellectual problems day in and out while also taking them out and making them meaningful.
So, David, earlier Mike was mentioning that he liked having a sister that was like he could put in front and that would take the bullet. What do you do in the company? What's your role in the company?
So I'm the chief scientist, and what I like to do is take the models that we've developed. They get characterized, but then we always want to ask, how are we going to apply them? And that's what I really like to do is how do we take advantage of this information and how do we apply it to increasing the efficiency
of clinical
trials.
Where are you from originally?
I was born in Venezuela.
Uh-huh. And how young were you when you moved to the United States?
I was 8 years old when we moved to the Richard
What was
Park.
It like when you moved to the United States?
It was strange, totally new culture. We came from, we lived on a small sugar plantation and suddenly moved into this suburban Ridgefield Park in New Jersey where we could see the Empire State Building from our house. So it was culturally and also seeing snow for the first time.
Uh-huh. What happened to your toys?
Yeah, so my parents said you can only take so much when we go to the States. So I needed to give away my prized collection of toy soldiers. And I just learned to share with that.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
Yeah, so my friend Raphael and I always played with these soldiers. And so I learned that, okay, it's just a thing. It was more about the people and enjoying Raphael. And I think that's what I've taken is being able to share successes.
You have a pretty close relationship with Mike. Who does Mike remind you of in your
childhood? Yeah, in a way, Mike reminds me of my older brother, who's also an engineer. I always looked up to him. He was always fun to be with, and he was also a challenge to be with because he was 5 years older than me.
It sounds to me like you guys, in Mike's childhood, he liked having a sister who was out in front with the with the ideas and took. It's like you guys have a natural chemistry between the two of you, don't you?
Yeah, I think we do. We challenge each other, we argue with each other, and we're still friends at the end of it. So it's
Mark?
Pretty remarkable.
Yeah, so if you guys are into to math and science and you know, predictive analytics, how does that translate or does it translate into the culture that you're trying to create at Origint?
So the name Origint means capable of original thought. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks a lot toward the culture that we've built. Everything has been about trying to take very complex mathematical methods that are well vetted, but use them in unique ways. And so part of the way that we do that is providing great transparency through the company so that everybody has great visibility into everything else that's going on. And that permeates all the way through even the business objectives and things like that. So I think that's been one of the big things. We've worked really hard to earn trust within the company and outside the company.
So, you know, how do you go about establishing trust in a company where it's really all about data?
So, I think one of the big things is we're out trying to push the envelope on what's possible. And you have to be reasonable and realistic about what's not possible. And so that's one of the areas where we've really worked hard to be, you know, honest about what can be done and what cannot. And so when we work with, for example, pharmaceutical companies, our reputation's not for sale. We're out there to build trust within a larger community. And we work very hard to do what we can, but not more than what's possible.
So, Dave, when you moved from Venezuela, did you speak English? And as well, how did that shape how you interact with the business today?
Yeah, I was born, my parents had moved to Venezuela after World War II. My dad had a job with GE, and so they sent him to Venezuela after the war. So we always spoke English in the house and Spanish outside of the house. So yeah, when we came back to the States, it was pretty natural. What's kind of interesting is when I'm in Southern California and somebody asks me for directions in Spanish, I can answer them. That kind of sort of translated to say, well, there's lots of different people and speaking, they have different languages and they have different needs, and it's kind of made me able to work with all kinds of different
people. How about when you moved from Venezuela to New Jersey and you saw here on one hand you're on a plantation, there, you know, you're looking at the Empire State Building. How did that, what effect did that have on you, and how's that affecting you nowadays?
Well, the thing that was kind of cool is I sort of shared the same experience my dad had, because he related a story of literally watching the Empire State Building go up from the house. So there I say, oh, wow, now I can see it. And so it's like sort of this real connection with my dad that allowed to happen.
Mm-hmm. So, David, how did you get interested in math and science?
When I was a freshman in high school, I broke my femur and I was laid up for, 12, 16 weeks. And so the teachers came in and I just realized I had this natural affinity for math. The math teacher was terrific. I just took it from there.
You told a story about going to summer school. That's usually for people who kind of struggle with math, like me. Why did you go to summer school?
Yeah, so I wanted to get ahead in math, and so I started taking the summer school math courses, which was kind of weird. And I ended up being kind of the assistant teacher, and so I learned how to share more sharing of information and teaching.
And how does that teaching ethos show up today at Origint?
Yeah, so we seek people with like a large different skill sets. And what I do is teach what I know, and what I ask is our employees to teach the rest of us what they know. So it's a real like teaching environment that we try to foster.
That's interesting. So your team is not just learning, but they're also teaching.
Yes, that's correct.
Yep. I guess that's one of the reasons that your team enjoys being your team, and they're planning to stick around, is because it's a give and take kind of environment, huh?
And that's where the transparency is absolutely essential. Yeah. So many problems that I try and solve in the business role, it turns out I don't actually have the best ideas. It comes from an engineer in my company who's actually just got a better perspective on something than I do. But it would never have known it if he couldn't see the problems that I was challenging.
Well, you're all about, your middle name's communication, isn't it?
But it's absolutely essential with any team, right? So the more transparent that we can be, the easier and the more efficient our communication is.
Well, I don't know. That's why I'm interested in interviewing you guys and getting a sense of why it works so well. Who's got the next question here?
For both of you, what particular book or movie growing up had a profound impact on your passions and your direction in life?
Later in life, it was the Atlas Shrugged, which I know sounds cliche, but it's true in my case. Earlier in my life, was reading history books about scientists. Richard Feynman, in particular, was an inspiration for me.
Oh, that's pretty neat. Richard Feynman was an inspiration for me too, but I think probably the earliest one was the double helix, by Jim Watson, and it's like everything is hidden in a DNA code, and that kind of spoke to math as well, and so it got me interested in biology.
Well, why was Atlas Shrugged so interesting to you?
It was the first time I'd read a book going in thinking that I knew who the hero was and came out the other end realizing I'd been cheering for the wrong side. It was just transformational in some of the ways that how I thought.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't want to get into too much of on objectivism because I wouldn't say that I'm a pure objectivist or anything Ayn Rand's thinking. Mm-hmm. But I guess at the time when I read it, it was mostly coming out of college. I'd have a very strong engineering background and was sort of transitioning to how are we going to use this in the real world and suddenly getting an appreciation for where resources and things need to be allocated.
And your partner, Dave, who's the scientist, was fascinated by DNA. So you guys really have complementary interests and strengths. It sounds naturally as well as in the business. Am I correct about that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's worked well. This has been a great relationship for the last 5 years.
What's the website address of this organization called Origent?
Origent.com. Origent.com.
Let me have that one more time.
Origent.com.
We've been speaking with Mike Kiemer and Dave Ennis, CEO and Chief Science Officer of Origent, here on Executive Leaders Radio. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Jim Morgan, Managing Director of an organization known as People Stretch Solutions. Jim, what is People Stretch Solutions?
We're a management consulting firm focused on sales growth transformation and CEO advisory.
Where are you from originally?
Big town of Wapakoneta, Ohio.
Uh-huh. And how many brothers and sisters?
I have one older sister, about 4 years older.
Uh-huh. What did Mom and Dad do for a living?
My dad was a tool and die maker, and my mother ran a cerebral palsy children's development center.
Who are you more like, your mom or your dad?
A little bit of a combination of both, but probably more like my mother.
Why?
I think she really instilled in me the desire to give back, to work with those that might be less fortunate, especially with her work with people with mentally and physically challenged.
I understand that... there was a company that you and a couple of other guys purchased and took financial risk with that was doing $26 million, and you guys took it to $50 million and 400 employees. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, so started with them in sales management, operations, bought the company, and then we continued to grow the company until we sold it a few years ago.
So what's the connection between, you told me you're more like your mom who ran a clinic. What's the connection between running that clinic and building a $50 million business?
Well, I think there's a lot of it. Number one, just the dedication to people, the dedication to helping develop those around you, surrounding yourself with strong people that are probably smarter than you.
So what's the connection between the clinic building a $50 million business and what you're doing now?
Well, now I'm doing it for other people. I'm trying to help other organizations grow. So working with CEOs that are trying to get to some level of growth and helping them drive their businesses and grow.
But it sounds like there's some deeper motivation here in helping. You know, it's not just a money thing. What is that?
So all the time I was in sales and growth, I think coming from a small town and from a family that did all right but not have a lot of money, that the importance of, in small towns, jobs are everything. And so as I grew the business, really understanding that every time we hit the next marker, that was more families that we were able to support, more jobs that we were able to grow. And so as I'm doing that for other CEOs as well, you know, that's my motivation, is how we can help support those families.
You told us earlier about your grandfather. How does he fit in the picture?
You know, my grandfather died when I was relatively young, but he was an entrepreneur. He had a dairy, and then once he sold that, you know, he actually still continued to have a milk route and go out and see clients on a regular basis. And so I had the chance to ride along with him a few times.
And when you rode along with your grandfather, how old were you and what impression did you have?
You know, I was probably about 6 or 7 years old, and it just really stuck in my mind just how much time he spent with people to really understand them and build those relationships. And so that was probably my first introduction to sales.
But didn't that really stink, the fact that, you know, it's probably early in the morning on a milk route or whatever, and you got to go ride with your grandfather?
I've always come from a family that's a very early morning family, so actually enjoyed being able to spend whatever time I could with him.
And you, and that was a positive impression you picked up. You, what do you mean you saw him developing relationships? What are you talking about?
You know, sometimes people think that sales is all in, come in, get the order. And he really, you know, took the time to just get to know these entrepreneurs and get to know these restaurant owners, market owners, and spend time with them. And so there was clearly good connection there.
Josh?
So with that, you're now translating that to business. And how have you been able to accelerate that connection that your grandfather taught you?
That's a great question. So I think that that really businesses are built on people, and businesses are about relationships. And so certainly being able to work with people to uncover what people's needs are, their fundamental buying motive, you know, what's driving them. It's not just about selling the next thing. It's about really understanding that.
Wait a minute. Their fundamental buying motive. I thought sales was you sell them what you want to sell them.
If you do that, that's pretty short-lived, and so certainly understanding how you can help other people succeed, how you can help solve their problems.
How'd you learn that lesson? How'd you learn that point?
You know, I think that over time, you know, certainly being able to, as you're building relationships as a youth, you know, understanding what motivates people, that, you know, continue to carry that in through
school. How'd you learn about what motivates people?
So I was very involved in scouting as a kid, and so you know, you learn early on if you're going to be out in the woods with some people and you have to rely on them to clean up dishes, build or make breakfast, it's going to be a cold, pretty cold, hungry weekend if you can't work with people and motivate them to do what they need to do.
So you just can't tell people what to do?
That doesn't work that well.
As opposed to what?
As opposed to really understanding kind of what drives them, you know, what how do they win, how can we help to
is that how you built a $50 million firm?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, understanding.
Wait a minute. So you've been there and done that. So you've built a $50 million firm, and that's what you're doing now for other businesses.
Yes.
So you really you've walked in their shoes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's and at each stage of that, there's different challenges as businesses grow, and so understanding those challenges is pretty important.
So you know the different stages as well as what the solution to the next problem is.
Sure.
Mark?
So you said scouting is important to you. You're now national chair of the Eagle Scout Association. How did you pick your friends? What characteristics of somebody would make them a good candidate to be
friend? He's a national what?
He's the chair of the National Eagle Scout Association.
I'm the recent chair. I was chair for 5 years, but stepped down a year or so ago. So, but to answer your question, so clearly a lot of friends from scouting, a lot of click kids from the neighborhood, and so you gravitate to people that have like interest, and so I tended to put myself in organizations where I would surround myself with people of character.
Wait. What do you mean of character? What are you talking about here? You were a kid.
Sure, and that doesn't mean I didn't get into trouble, because I managed to do plenty of that as well. But you know, when you are around, one of the things that scouting does is it instills character and leadership skills.
What's the website address of this organization known as People Stretch Solutions?
It's peoplestretch.com.
Let me have that one more time.
peoplestretch.com.
We've been speaking with Jim Morgan, Managing Director of People Stretch Solutions here on Executive Leaders Radio. John, can you give us a rundown on who else we've had the opportunity of hanging out with today?
Our first guest today was Bill Buff, Managing Partner of Stratacom. Then we talked to Reed Jackson, President and CEO of CompuSearch. Our third guests were Mike Keemer and Dave Innist, respectively the CEO and Chief Science Officer of Origint. And our last guest was Jim Morgan, Managing Director of People Stretch Solutions.
I would like to thank my co-hosts, Mark Haas, Association for Enterprise Growth, Josh Levy, Brunch Digital, John Schuhart, Graybeard Coaching, for giving me a hand structuring the questions and hopefully providing our listening audience an educational an entertaining show. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. That's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. Thank you for joining us today, and do have a nice day. Bye-bye.